Good morning, I want to call the tax committee to order, and members, we want to take some time to go through a presentation from a group of, I think it's five foundations, they can tell us who did this, the Minnesota Bottom Line Better Results for Dollars Spent study, and this actually came out after the House Tax Bill came out last year, around the time we were trying to walk people through understanding tax expenditures, and the House majority actually proposed doing a lot of repeal of a lot of these tax expenditures. And after we did that, this group came out with a study. Part of their study is on a report. Part of it's on taxes. Most of it isn't. So we actually asked them to come and talk to us, not only, you know, the big picture on what they were trying to do with the group, and then we're most interested in the tax chapters, of which I believe there were two or three. And we just thought it would be helpful as we're trying to get through this deficit now and in future years to take a look again at a lot of work that nonprofits have come together to do. So welcome to the committee, and if you can tell us who you are for the tape and direct us to what we should be looking at.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, representatives. I'm very happy to be here today with my colleague, Armi Armajani, from the Public Strategies Group. I'm Sandy Vargas. I'm the CEO and president of the Minneapolis Foundation. And we're here today to talk very, very briefly about the study that Madam Chair mentioned this morning. It's called Minnesota's Bottom Line. And this is a study that is a collection of ideas that was assembled about a year ago. And as we talked to Chairman Lencheski, she was talking about the work that was being done here. Let me say that the genesis of this report was from the concern of five foundations, and those foundations are the Bush Foundation, the Minneapolis Foundation, Northwest Area Foundation, St. Paul Foundation, and the Minnesota Community Foundation. And there were a number of concerns that our group had as leaders of nonprofits looking at the state budget. And we had, let me just enumerate some of the concerns, just a few. One is that we had a real concern about the structural deficit of the state budget and looking at the expenditures and the revenues and the gap between them. The second area was questions that started to come forward from our group saying, can we come up with ideas that improve services to Minnesotans that cost less and add more value for the dollar? The third area was the need to start a conversation on a different conversation on how do we think about the state budget, how do we get some ideas out there, not because these are the end all of ideas, but to make sure that the dialogue between Minnesotans is happening in a way that is different than just cutting or taxing, that we actually look at the value for the dollar. And then we wanted to make sure that people knew that this isn't, again, this study was not precise. We wanted to put these ideas out there so that we would broaden the dialogue and that the ideas would be improved. And we also had some requirements that required Public Strategies Group to have very sound data and deep analysis. Let me say just a couple of other things. There were, just to sum up before I turn it over to Armi, we looked at the whole budget. We didn't look at just the expenditures, and I think that is the point that we're trying to make here, and Armi will go into that a little bit deeper, because obviously tax expenditures are a major part of the budget, maybe not over 50%, but creeping up to that amount. We also looked at the costs. And we really wanted to raise the question about what kind of value do we get for the public dollar? What is that that we get back instead of just thinking about costs? In this report, in this study, we focused on major opportunities. We'll only talk about those things that you're interested in this morning, but there are some other ideas there. We also thought about what about the sustainability of policy changes? What positions Minnesota for the future? How do we think about restructuring some of these policies? And the other comment that we made to each other is that each idea stands alone. It's not additive. It's not something that's in a collection that fits together like a puzzle. Each idea stands alone. So, again, these ideas were used as an opportunity to promote a dialogue on how Minnesota can create we hope, a brighter future. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Armajani.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Babak Armajani. I'm chair of the Public Strategies Group, and we were contracted by the five foundations to do this exploration. I won't use the word study because it isn't it wasn't a study in the sense that you're typically used to. I mean, this was done over a period of about a month, and so it was a very rapid review of the horizon and the mining of opportunities for significant ways to improve the bottom line, that is, to produce better results even as we have less money by redesigning or rethinking the way we do things. And as Sandy said, it was intended to stimulate dialogue. We hope that the data that we have here is reliable. I wouldn't say it's deep, and I would say I'm sure that if you were to pursue any of these ideas further, you would want to do more research and analysis than what's presented here. So this isn't it shouldn't be taken as a comprehensive thing, because it was done in a very short period of time. There were three particular areas that I think might have interest to the committee. One was an opportunity to look at how we spend money on housing and to invest that money more strategically in order to get better housing outcomes. And one of the biggest ways we spend money on housing is through the tax system. And so the mortgage interest exemption is by far the largest chunk of money that we spend on housing, and so we focused on looking at that and seeing if it was producing the outcomes for which it was intended, home ownership, there was significant evidence that it doesn't stimulate home ownership, although it's something that we all hold near and dear, and so it's politically a very difficult issue. But we surface it as much to make the case that we ought to look more carefully at tax expenditures as anything else. And then there was an opportunity with respect to counties, there may be we didn't get far enough to put something in for local governments, but for counties, which are all twisted up in our property tax system and local aid system, the opportunity here, just to put it in simple terms, is to let counties be more accountable for the revenues they raise in property taxes, and to hold them accountable for outcomes that they produce, and give them more flexibility in how they produce those outcomes. And this isn't exactly the same, but it's from the same family of ideas that the AMC group of people from the AMC worked on the so-called county redesign project, which you may have seen. And then the third concept was just crying out for something that I know you all have already seriously considered and pursued, and so we were just adding our voice to this, and that is that we really need to get much more serious about tax expenditures, and the law requires a biennial review of tax expenditures, but not just looking at the expenditures, the law says we should also look at the impact. What are the results we're getting from those expenditures, and are these tax expenditures effective? And we were unable to unearth evidence of any sort of serious such review, and so we were suggesting that it ought to be done because tax expenditures are a huge part of our budget, and there are reasons behind all of our tax credits and deductions, and they're good reasons, and we ought to be evaluating whether we're getting the outcomes from those tax benefits, just like we ought to be evaluating whether we get results from money we spend on the expenditure side of the budget. And these, as just in closing, I'd say, you know, these concepts were really put forth for dialogue. They're not perfect. They are not recommendations. We didn't have enough time to take this to the point of recommendations, but rather to stimulate dialogue and thinking. And so we'll be happy to join you for a few minutes in dialogue about the ideas that are of the greatest interest to you.
Thank you. I want to ask you, Ms. Vargas called you Army, and you said Babak Armajani, so what should we...
Everybody calls me Army.
Okay, so if I can ask, for members, the report is in your packet, and I noticed the pages are numbered, each chapter starts with one again, so this is a little confusing, but if you go to the back of the packet, you can see that your last chapter is number 9, it's actually the last page. But go to the next chapter, 8, and that's the tax expenditure chapter. And I thought it would be helpful for members to just look at what's page 5 in that chapter. And just so you know, we actually do a big review. We don't, in the review, there's no valuation of are these tax expenditures good ideas or not. It's more a listing and what they cost. And it looks like this, and we just had that report. So we actually walked through, and we had Dr. Wilson walk through this with us, where we look at the billions of spending we're doing through tax expenditures, but there's no value system related, no review of effectiveness, et cetera. But if you could just talk about that chart on page 5, because this is an interesting way to condense sort of this study into one page. And I don't think members are used to seeing it that way, that, you know, that you can get up to $11 billion when you total these up. And we do understand here that there are a lot of things going on simultaneously within the tax code, so it's hard to count them up. And our Department of Revenue staff, Dr. Wilson, always reminds us you can't just add them up in a row because there's lots of interactions. But could you talk about, you know, this chart you've got in front of us? I think it's just interesting for members to see all these items in one spot.
Okay, well, this comes from the Revenue Department study, maybe not the one you got most recently, but... So it's just organizing the data in a different way, and down the left-hand side of the chart, you see the larger tax expenditures. As you know, we have hundreds of tax expenditures. These are the ones that were over $60 million, and we just made that cutoff arbitrarily just to draw attention to the larger items. And then you can, by looking in the columns, you can see which tax these expenditures pertain to, and the grand total, which should tie to something close to what's being reported in the Revenue Department study. It would not. The grand total would not include the smaller tax expenditures. Okay. So that's just the same data on a page.
Okay, and then we've got questions. I just want to, just for members, you know, obviously they're not going to sit and read this whole thing right at this moment, but I do want to point out for members looking at it, the chapter on the housing issue, I'm not sure what chapter that is, 4 or 6?
Three.
Okay, chapter 3. That, if you could talk to us a little bit about what this group was recommending. I tried to tell you before we started, the Minnesota House independently ahead of this study took a look at that tax expenditure, and you took a different approach in what you did. But what we did is we said, look, this is disproportionately going to the wealthiest Minnesotans. It's not increasing home ownership. Let's rejigger it, get some revenue out of it for other parts of the budget, but also create a new credit to dramatically help most homeowners receive more of a tax benefit, so that those with the largest, the highest mortgages who are disproportionately receiving large amounts. We made a value judgment as the House majority that that was something we could no longer afford in this sort of deficit. And so we actually used some of it to pay for schools and health care and other things, that revenue, and then we dramatically enhanced the benefit to the majority of Minnesota homeowners by introducing a new credit after repealing the deduction. Can you tell us a little bit about how you looked at the housing subsidy issue through the tax expenditure and what you recommended in your chapter on that?
Certainly. Madam Chair, I just want to underscore, these really aren't recommendations.
Okay.
But these are possibilities. And so what we looked at was, first of all, we looked for evidence that to tell us whether the mortgage interest deduction did indeed stimulate home ownership, and we were unable to prove that hypothesis. And I think largely because the federal deduction so overshadows our state deduction that the state deduction isn't really a big influence in the marketplace. And so then, having reached that conclusion, we posited, well, if we didn't have the mortgage interest deduction, as you all actually acted on that proposition, what could we do to promote better housing outcomes? And so we posited that money could be invested strategically in housing outcomes. And I think that part of this opportunity that we described there was suggesting more that today, the way on the expenditure side of the budget, the way we spend money is to spread money out among various housing strategies and various constituencies and various housing programs and to meet the needs of the homeless, to provide affordable housing for the working poor. There are multiple agendas there, our notion here was, if you identify the housing outcomes that you want, and that's a political decision for you all to make, then invest the money in those outcomes strategically, such that it moves the dials on the results that you're seeking, rather than spreading it out in order to satisfy lots of different constituencies, and which is how Minnesota state housing expenditures on the expenditure side of the budget appeared to us.
Thank you, Ms. Vargas. Yes,
Madam Chair. A couple of other facts. As we were looking into this policy, I think it goes without saying that people who own their own homes, seniors, for example, or possibly people in rural areas who own their own homes aren't able to take advantage of this tax. So, tax deduction. So, it is to your point about it does go to a specific group of people. I think the number was between 30% and 40% of the folks, and so it isn't as broad as it first appears.
And Ms. Vargas, I think the data we got last year is about 27% of Minnesotans benefit from this tax expenditure. People have come to view it as an entitlement, and when they learn that 3/4 of Minnesotans actually don't receive it, I think it's an eye-opener, because people are, I do think they confuse the federal versus the state, and of course Minnesota was only looking at the state, and they do disproportionately go to the wealthiest Minnesotans, that 27% who benefit. So we were trying to reorder that, but I appreciate how complicated it is to do this. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you much, very much, Madam Chair, and Ms. Vargas and Mr. Armajani, thank you so much for being here. And this is a very strong report here, and not only the areas we're talking about here, but the one on health care is just right on point, I think. And I have to say that they have been leaders on the work on redesign and reform and more value for the dollars, and not only is that enlightening, but it's inspiring for many, so thank you for your work. But I'd like to take you back to Chapter 8, page 3, on the page 3, where you look at some approaches on the tax expenditures. And I think those approaches that you're mentioning there get to two huge factors for constituents and for taxpayers, and that's transparency and making sure you have high value for the dollars. And for example, under that first suggestion, ensure that current tax expenditures are affirmatively reauthorized, and then you're moving to determine the policy outcome desired, and then putting performance measures to make sure we're doing that. Because when you get to the mortgage interest deduction, economic studies have shown it really has little impact on home ownership. It does seem to have an impact on increased housing consumption, but not necessarily the ownership. And so I'd like you to comment on that, because when we look at local government aid, or we look at education, or we look at health care funding, we scrutinize that. And we try to put, although we don't have performance indicators, we at least every couple years, we reauthorize and we look at that funding, and we discuss this quite a bit. I think the fact that we don't really talk about tax expenditures is a huge transparency issue, besides the other issues of value and so forth. So what are your thoughts on that? And do you think, any just further comments on your six suggestions there.
Go ahead.
You
go first.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I think this is a particularly exciting opportunity for this committee and for your colleagues in the Senate to debate some of these possibilities and these ideas. So one thing is, when you review a tax expenditure, and if you were to follow this approach, actually reauthorize a tax expenditure on a biennial basis, there's another really important step here, and that is you decide what are the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd say it in the law, or however council tells you to manifest it. But so everybody knows what is it. So it's not just measuring the impact of tax expenditures, it's measuring whether or not you're getting the outcome that you said that Minnesotans want from this tax expenditure. And that would be a different kind of work, I think, for this committee, and it would fit in the paradigm of what we call results-based government, which is what's happening across the country and across the world in democracies, is moving more and more towards this kind of a model, and that this would be a specific manifestation of it for this committee. And those ideas are captured under number 2 there, the second of the 6. And then you could have the your own research staff or the legislative auditor report to you on whether you're getting the results that you sought to purchase with that tax expenditure. Then we talk in number 3, we talk about equal scrutiny and sunsetting, and which kind of goes along with reauthorization, so that the tax expenditures that may have been important in the post-World War II period, but may no longer be as crucial in your judgment as something else, would get reevaluated, so that our tax system stays current with the circumstances of the time and with your reading of the will of Minnesotans. So that's the essence of that a package of ideas, and I think it's a very exciting opportunity for this committee to help steer how our resources are deployed.
Ms. Vargas.
Madam Chair, Representative Marquardt, I think the other thing, although it doesn't say it specifically here, is to figure out what kind of perverse incentives do we have kind of embedded in some of these taxes or in some of the public investment that we have. And, for example, on the Chapter 1 where we're talking about pay for wellness, it's very different than paying for services. And we've got some perverse incentives built right into the work that we have in public policy. And so kind of lifting those up, making sure that we've got transparency of those perverse incentives, and then figuring out how do we get to the real outcomes that we want. When you look at all of the local government that we have, all of the government that we have, you start raising questions about, do we need 87 counties? And I'm a former county administrator, and so I just, you know that. But it's like, it raises a question about what kind of outcomes does 87 counties give us? Or all of the local governments, or 36 police departments? And I know this is very hard politically, but I think our job here is to raise those questions and really say we need to do some more dialogue and more thinking about what it is that we want as a state of citizens and residents that live here in Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much. And I really want to commend the work on the bottom line for bringing this to light, but also Chair Lencheski for your work last year in bringing this to light, because quite frankly, 2 years ago I maybe knew what tax expenditures were, but just by looking into it you realize, now this is 40% of the budget, which does not see much of the light of day. And as a tax committee member now for about 8 years, and it took me 6 years to really figure out what these are all about. Can you imagine people who don't deal with this on a daily basis? And so this report, I think the more we can bring it to light, I know when I talk to folks back home and I say, you know what, we're in this huge budget deficit, but there's 40% of the budget we don't even look at. And they just kind of shake their heads. And I say, you know, a few of them we wouldn't, of course, ever change probably. You know, no tax on food and, well, clothing's iffy and so forth. But when I also say that we have so many of these that benefit a very few. And then the last point where I get people really shaking their heads is where I give them the example of the same homeowner with the same mortgage, and one gets all of the benefit and another person gets zero, and they have exactly the same circumstance. And there's a real fairness issue with that. And I don't know what the answer is, but I just think with this report and what Chair Lencheski did last year in bringing this to light, and I don't think it matters if you're a Democrat or Republican. I think it matters to the constituency. Are we going to look at transparency? Are we going to look at value for the dollars? Are we going to look at outcomes? We're going to look at fairness. We're going to look at use and priorities, and is it doing what we want it to do? I think those are all legitimate questions. And, you know, I was talking to even the folks from the Realtors group in my office a few weeks ago, and if we took all the dollars in housing, like your Chapter 3 talks about, you just use the mortgage interest deduction, but we use the property deduction, all these other ones, and use local government aid and the PTR program, all the things that kind of revolve around home ownership, if you will, we would probably, taking the same amount of money, design a different system than what was designed in 1913 when the mortgage interest deduction became part of it. And I think we'd all agree. And for us not to look at that when we have a huge deficit looming is almost negligent. We need to start taking a look at this. And it's not Democrat or Republican. And we do that with spending all the time, and some things I agree and don't agree. But I think we need to take a concerted effort to really start looking at some of these things that have been discussed here. So I appreciate you also having this meeting today, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you. Very good. It's politically difficult. I think a lot of folks don't agree on this one. We'll get into it. There's a lot of people on the list. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe just a quick point of clarification. The 29% of Minnesotans who avail themselves of the home mortgage interest deduction. Is that all Minnesotans, Madam Chair, or is that homeowners in Minnesota? Because I thought it was 70% of homeowners actually availed themselves of the interest deduction.
We can ask Ms. Manzi to give clarification. And this is just the state. You know, we're only working in the state, not the federal. So, Ms. Manzi, did you want to?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I didn't bring that information from last session with me here today, but I can get it provided to you.
Yeah, and it was provided last time, but it should be easy to find. So we'll get that out to everybody. We had it when we went through the omnibus tax bill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So maybe just a comment in response to Representative Marquardt, and I really like this too. I think the overlap between this report and some of the bills that I've submitted and others is really high, and so I appreciate and respect the work. I think this will advance our discussion and our ability between now and a year from now when we have a real deficit to fix, to really get at some of the areas that we need to. I'm just going to restate my perspective on the tax expenditures again. I think they're in a totally different category. We refer to them as spending and expenditures, and the state of Minnesota, outside of refundable tax credits, never writes a check. All we're doing is allowing people to hold on to their money through some kind of a vehicle, tax credit vehicle, largely because we're taxing like crazy on all other fronts. And the reason we have to do that, and the reason we play all these games, is we just spend too much. So I really like your ideas on the spending side, and I think if we enacted them, we might not have to do anything on the tax expenditure side. Maybe we could even reduce our tax rates and flatten it and make it transparent and reduce some of the credits. I wouldn't even be opposed to that if we were really making progress on the spending side. But I think the focus on tax expenditures here today is to mask the fact that we do not have spending under control. We are just out of control from a spending standpoint and have been for a couple decades. So I'd like to make sure we spend our emphasis and our time on the spending side of it, and not look to find ways through removing tax expenditures to simply extract more money out of the public to pay for our spending. And if you take that logic to its fullest extent, you'd have to look at every dollar that we don't take from the public in taxes. We'd have to examine every dollar of personal income out there and say, well, why didn't we collect that? What are they doing with their money? Is it productive use or not? Maybe we should take it from them if it isn't, because we can deploy it more effectively in state government. So I don't want to give up on this rhetorical discussion, this philosophical argument we're having, because I think it's the root of the solution that we're going to pursue here at the state. And if we don't get at the spending side of it, all the other stuff continues to be problematic. If we do get at the spending side of it, I think a lot of those problems go away. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Downey. And if I may, I hope I don't embarrass you or embarrass me, but you expressed frustration with me and this whole discussion in the elevator yesterday. And if I can, I understand that. And I really think we philosophically disagree, and we can respect that about each other, and folks do disagree. But I do want to say that, I agree that folks need to look through the spending. And this committee, the only place we have spending is in aids and credits. So when folks want to reduce spending in this committee, they have to bring forth bills to cut LGA, to cut market value homestead credit, to cut county aid, whatever. And if they do, trust me, I'll hear them, because everyone needs to start cutting. But this committee, is the two other big areas it's in charge of is revenue and tax expenditures. So this is the committee. This is the committee that should deal with tax expenditures. I would argue, I wish all the finance chairs, and this would be the case when the Republicans were the finance chairs too, should have the courage to look at the tax expenditures in their area, because they're kind of getting a double bang here, members. They're getting health expenditures, or health spending, plus they're getting tax expenditures over from us. If you're the K-12 chair, you're getting K-12 spending plus tax expenditures in K-12 too. And so they kind of get to have spending in two committees, is one way to think about it. So, they are scrutinizing their spending side. They really don't come forward and say, hey, repeal the K-12 credit, will ya? Because that's money to them, too, for their goals and objectives in those committees. So, I'm not so harsh on them, because they really aren't in charge of that, but we are. We are the committee. We are the only committee who can pass the repeal of a tax expenditure, growing it, shrinking it, whatever. So I do think we need to do that, but I think, in a pure form, I agree with what you're saying, Representative Downey. I think you're trying to say, look, the problem is the spending side. It isn't this stuff. And, money is money. It's people's money. where I would just, you know, hope I could just honestly convince you a little bit here. This idea of writing the check thing, to me, that is not an expression in my mind of when government spends money. If the only time government spends money is when it gives someone a check, that takes so much of government spending out of the play. Because, for example, I just use the example. Let's say this group on this side of the table all needs to pay withholding tax in their check as state legislators. Except for we just, through a tax expenditure, decide people with green eyes don't have to pay withholding taxes. We absolutely make the rest of the group. Here's where the spending comes in. We absolutely make the rest of the group either pay more or get less. One of the two. They either get less government when we let the green-eyed people off the hook, or everyone else pays more. So that's the implicit spending that's going on when you give people or groups the ability to not have to pay the tax that other things are. So it isn't a check. We're not giving a check to the green-eyed guy like, here's money. We're saying you don't have to pay green-eyed guy, but all you people get to pay more. Or you get less government for the same price. So that's where I think the discussion really is, and I understand your frustration with this. I just want you to hear that. But I think it's something that comes up in every committee, and I think from the far right to the far left, we can all make arguments about it, but this committee is the committee that has the responsibility to deal with tax expenditures above every other committee. So to respond to me, Representative Downey?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. It is a good discussion, and it's one we need to have, and I'm sure we'll have many heated discussions because we got a brick wall that we hit a year from now. So it's the right conversation to have, and it's very open and honest, and I appreciate the chance to have it here. Thank you.
Good, thank you. Representative Broad, then Reinert. Oh, I'm sorry. And Representative Liebling was to Representative Downey's point. Did you still want to get in on that? Sorry.
I do, Madam Chair, and thank you. I don't want to beat a dead horse here, you know. And
he's alive and well.
Okay. I mean, we're going over a lot of the same ground, and, you know, it's fine. It's not a bad thing to have an honest discussion about where we have differences. But, you know, sometimes the rhetoric, it really bothers me because I don't think it's backed up with facts. And when you're talking about spending being out of control, and when we get the spending under control, you know, I'm on Health and Human Services Finance Committee, too. And a lot of us have spent the last few days really looking at the budget because obviously Health and Human is a fast-growing area and it's going to take a big hit if we're just doing cuts, okay, and even if we're doing cuts and revenue increases. And, you know, Representative Downey, I wish you were on that committee, and I know Representative Broad is, but, you know, the choices that are being made, when you talk about spending out of control, it gives people an image of people are getting luxury somewhere, you know? Now, maybe everything isn't totally as fair as it could be, but, you know, I wish you could see the kind of things we're spending money on and what we're, you know, who's getting the money. You know, we're talking about elderly and disabled people for the most part. You know, we're talking about there was a group that provides service to very disabled children that are ventilator-dependent or technology-dependent who are in their homes, getting service in their homes because it's cheaper than having them in a hospital, which they would otherwise need. And, you know, are we going to be able to keep paying for that, to keep them in their homes, because their family obviously wouldn't be able to do it on their own, and so on and so on. I mean, this is when you say spending out of control, and, you know, you don't want to look at the tax side until we get spending under control. You know, I really would like to see your plan. What do you think we're spending too much on? Who do you want to kick off? Because if it's Health and Human Services, you know, I mean, now we do have growing costs there because we've got growing numbers of elderly. You know, do you want to tell people if you have a disabled child, it's your own problem, don't come to us? Because that's where we're going with this stuff. But, you know, we're going to have a very different state than we're all used to, I'll tell you that much. So I just had to get that off my chest.
Hey, Representative Downey, you want to respond?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. And this will be my last comment. But the GAMC discussion we had is a perfect example. I think in the end we're, you know, going to be able to take care of those people, and when the focus is on those people and the kind of care they get. It was a tough negotiated process, but we're at a point where we're cutting that program literally, from a cost standpoint, in a third or a fourth. So I think we can do it, and we can honor our obligations, and we can honor our Minnesota legacy, and in fact, we have to if we're going to position ourselves for the future. So this isn't about gutting government. This is about positioning our state for a bright future, and I think if we take this brick wall and apply it creatively and take some of the ideas that are presented in this report, there's a lot of ways for us to restructure, streamline, privatize, you know, reform what we're doing in a way that's actually better for people and at less cost. So that's the argument I'm trying to make, is let's push hard on those buttons first before we just look to ways to eliminate tax expenditures to fund what we're currently doing. Thank you.
And to that point is Rukavina, then it's Broad, Reinert, Coles. Rukavina.
Well, but if I talk, then Representative Downey will have to.
Yes, he gets to respond if people, yes, that's,
you know,
it's only fair.
I think, I look around this committee, and I think I'm the longest serving member on this tax committee. And so I've seen a lot of, you know, things happen. And, you know, we do have a revenue problem besides the spending problem. We cut the income tax in 99 and again a little more in 2000, and we lost, I think at the time, Joel, Mr. Michael, it was about $1.8 billion biennium. It's probably less now because of the economy, but that started us on the road to our budget deficit problem. And at the same time, Madam Chair, you, I think, were in your first year or so on this committee, and we changed a number of formulas, funding formulas for the Minnesota Miracle, and both on the school and on the local government level. And you were a big benefactor, Representative Downey, your district, your people, a huge benefactor in that new spending. And yet every time we see proposals coming from the governor, we see LGA cuts. We don't hear anything about the transit levy takeover, which cost a good chunk of money being cut, or looking at whether we could afford to give Edina and some of the other school districts, Minnetonka, I think, and other ones on this committee for people that want to cut, looking at that, what was a billion whatever a year cost, we don't look at that. And, you know, Madam Chair, you talk about tax expenditures. I think a lot of people at this table supported the MVEST money being rolled into, now it's out of your control or it's somewhere. The transit levy takeover is now paid by the MVEST money. And although there are some general fund dollars that still pay for that, so nobody ever brings up looking at that. But the ideas we have, Representative Downey, don't seem fair to me. You know, back in 70-something, 1970, my good friend Joe Begich, who still comes to my house almost every Sunday, who used to be a state representative next to me on the range, passed a law that said you couldn't charge a private person in a nursing home on private pay any more than you charge the person on Medicare being paid for by the state and feds. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that change is now in the governor's supplemental budget, where you can charge somebody over a three-year period. I think it's an unlimited amount. You probably know it better than me, Representative Murphy. You know, my mother was on private pay for the entire time she was in the nursing home, Representative Downey, and my ma and dad didn't have much money. My ma was a cleaning lady and my dad was a steel worker. How they managed to save the amount of money they did, I don't know. But they did, and it all went, and that's good. My mother got taken very care of very well, but my mother didn't get taken care of any better than the lady next to her, my Auntie Kay, who was in the nursing home at the same time, and I was both of their caretakers. My aunt didn't get any better treatment, and she was on Medicaid after her little bit of money left and got paid out. So those are the kind of things you're trying to justify. I absolutely don't agree with you or that philosophy at all. The person that ends up in a nursing home, maybe that fell down and broke their hip, some elderly person that managed to save 50 or 60 grand, and they're in a nursing home, and it's going to cost them 10 grand a month, and they're in there for 5-6 months, and all their money goes because you can charge them more for the same care as the person next to them. And then when they get out of the nursing home, if they get out, which a lot of them do, they go home to what? Nothing? No nest egg left? You don't think that's right. I know you don't. Your wife's in the audience. You're not going to say that you think that's right in front of her. Come on now. So You know that's not right, but that's the things we're going to do because you say we have a spending problem. That is a spending problem for some families, to take more out of one person's pocket for the same treatment as another to try to balance this act. And nobody can argue with me at this table because I've been here long enough to know that we have a revenue problem too. We cut the taxes. Everybody said at the time, Roger Moe was running against Tim Pawlenty for governor, and Roger Moe said, you don't have the growth to keep this going. You don't. But now that other people got theirs, they want to take away from everybody else to pay for their bills. You come in and you help me. I'll cut something, you cut something. You cut that money going to Edina and transit levy and to your school district, I'll cut something. But a lot of people at this table are watching other people's things get cut, LGA, school, whatever, and they're not offering up anything at the table. So, you know, I don't agree with a lot of what's being said here. And I got green eyes, Representative.
Representative Downey, did you? No. Okay, so Representative Broad, and isn't this interesting to watch us? We're glad you're here. We are on the report, Representative Broad.
Oh, we were on the report. Madam Chair, I have two components of my question. First is just a response, and the second is actually the question that are related to the report. Representative Rukavina, I think your statements and your concerns actually missed the point of the report, in fairness. I think the point of the report is to actually talk about how we are spending money well and how we might be able to spend it better. It's not about cutting here. It's about not about cutting there. It's about aligning our revenue stream and aligning our expenditures with things that actually create greater prosperity for the state in whatever area they are. That's why, I mean, I'm not across the board cut kind of person, because it implies that the way we're spending money today is right and that we should just cut equally. I don't think that's the case, and I think a report like this shows that there's certain areas that might make more sense to put more dollars in, and there's certain areas that might make more sense to pull dollars out of. And so when I listen to Representative Liebling talk about cutting people, if she doesn't like Representative Downey's rhetoric about freedom and prosperity, the rhetoric about cutting people off misses the point too, because as we seek to ensure that every taxpayer dollar is well spent, which we all want, we should seek to ensure that the priorities of the state are both identifiable and that we can create outcomes based on those priorities. When you just talk about cutting people off of a health care, you're not talking about how we actually serve them better within the dollars that we have to serve them. And I think the GAMC discussion is a great example of how we were told there was two options: people getting thrown off health care or people having health care. Well, the negotiations proved that there was another option, and it's called reforming how government does business. And I think that discussion is crucial, and it brings me, to the report itself. You know, we have discussions over tax expenditures, and I think the information that you're bringing forward is very important information. We have discussions over renter credit, and we get told that we're cutting renter's credit when all we're really trying to do is make sure that the renter's credit is paid on actual numbers, not percentages. And so we've got all sorts of things out there, not just in the tax expenditure realm, but in government in general, that maybe are nonsensical. We in terms of local government aid, the purpose of local government aid was to ensure that all places around the state had an opportunity to provide basic services. Well, nowhere is basic services actually defined. So we don't know if the dollars are being well spent and being spent for that purpose or being spent for some other purpose. And so I think that absolutely is worthy of those discussions. So to me, when I look at this report on page one of, let's just wait, hold on, the first section, actually page one, like the legit page one, the first page one. One of the things that I see in there is that we're faced with a series of great opportunities brilliantly disguised as impossible solutions, and we have an impossible solution called a budget deficit, not just in the immediate term, but in the long term. And I think that the examples in this report are crucial for us not just to talk about, but to actually move forward on in a number of different ways. But you can't do it in a vacuum. If we just look at tax expenditures, Madam Chair, which I give you credit for trying to crack that nut. That's a tough one. But if we just look at the tax expenditure or the freedom expenditures side of things, we're missing the point because we are not looking at how we actually create a tax system that is good for a 21st century economy versus just assuming that the tax system we have today, which was built on a 1950s economy, is going to work going forward. And so if you just nibble around the edges on tax expenditures or even cutting taxes, Representative Rukavina, if you just do one or the other, it doesn't actually get us where we need to go. And I think that a report like that, like this, is about focusing us as policymakers on the future and giving us steps for what we got to do today to get there. And so I really thank you for your work. The question I have, however, is how do you in Washington State and in other areas where you've done some great work from the public strategy group side of things, how did you either see the political will coalesce around making a move in that direction, or how do you create the underlying movement to ensure that that political will occurs? Because I don't see a barrier of ideas, I see a barrier of political will. And I'm just curious in your experience throughout the country, how you see that actually occur.
Mr. Armajani.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, I think a really exciting opportunity here is that part of what we've heard this morning is a debate between liberals and conservatives about how much government and how much taxes and how much spending we want to have. And that isn't, I think that's a very important debate. I hope you keep having it. But it isn't very different from what I've heard for 42 years that I've been involved in government in Minnesota. While I hope you keep having that debate, what I think is exciting, and I think this is perhaps what you're leading us towards, is that whether we believe in more government or less government or more spending or less spending, we all agree that what we do, we need to do absolutely as well as possibly, as efficiently as possibly, as effectively as possibly, especially now that we're in dire fiscal circumstances. And so I would point to Vermont actually as a little bit more, although the parties did come together in the state of Washington around focusing on results and focusing spending on results, as you point out, and the governor, who was a Democrat, and Jim West, who was the majority leader in the Senate, who's a conservative Republican, disagreed on just about everything except that we should focus on results, and they did come together to do that. But in the state of Vermont, I think we've seen an even more interesting example, which I would like to be Minnesota, because we have a history of showing the world how to do democracy. And that is that the governor, Jim Douglas, who's a Republican, and the legislature, with both houses controlled by Democrats, have recently, in the past 6 years or so, been having bitter conflict and mistrust. And they agreed reluctantly to come to the table around reform, around what Representative Marquardt calls redesign, and thinking of how can we do our services differently. And they sat as metaphorically as far away from each other at the table as they could at first. But with some facilitation and some dialogue, they found that although they had these philosophical differences, they had a mutual interest in rethinking how state government does those services, various, you know, services where there's lots of money, health care, corrections, human services are the same things that we look at here. And And starting with a small little group that was key representatives of the governor and some and key leaders from the legislature, and then cascading out, they developed a series of challenges. And these were reform ideas that they could agree on. And they didn't spell out what the reform should be. They challenged the executive branch to come back with the specifics. But they said, here's how much money we're willing to spend, and here's the outcomes that we want. And what we don't want you to do is to start with how we do things today and tell us what to cut. If you do that, go away. We're not interested. We've already heard that conversation. What we want you to do is take this amount of money and these outcomes and redesign the system and to try to maximize these outcomes. And we believe that our state employees are talented, skilled, professional people, and they're capable of this kind of innovation. We challenge them to do that. And so, and they passed a bill that actually cut, it actually reduced spending in the budget very significantly. Vermont's a lot smaller than we are, but in these specific areas, and they spelled out the exact outcomes they wanted, and they challenged the executive branch to come back. And we don't know yet whether that's going to work, but it was a way to transcend some of the different philosophical differences that are appropriate that you all have with each other, but to come together around the proposition that we basically, and that's what this work is all about and what the foundation's really, what their message is, is the way we do things in Minnesota today is not handed down by God as the only way to do it. There are lots of ways to do things. And we ought to at least allow ourselves to explore these options. And that, I hope, will create a new dialogue in Vermont as it did in Washington and Iowa, which is another place that invited lots of reform like this.
Thank you.
Just as a follow-up, Madam Chair, and I actually, the Iowa model is an interesting model and related to the charter agencies that I think you guys worked on there. And I think that idea of a competitive reform built from within as opposed to being pushed from outside is a really unique model. And I just hope that the political will is created, and I appreciate your input.
Thank you. Representative Reiner.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles has to leave for another meeting, so I'll pass.
Representative Coles.
And Madam Chair, the debate's interesting, and I'm not actually going to try. I'm trying hard not to further the partisan debate. I think the report is very interesting. I think there's a lot that we can gather from the report. And I don't recall which one of you talked about the county redesign issue, but I just wanted to point out for members when. You know, the governor came forward with his proposal last year around human services redesign, and candidly, I don't know enough of the details of that as to whether I support that or not. But when I looked at, I had never actually counted and done the math, but when we were handed the runs with regard to county aid reductions in the governor's proposed budget, I actually went through, and on that on the sheet, you can see the population in each county. And I didn't know this. I don't know if members know this. I'm guessing most Minnesotans don't know this, but we have 18 counties in the state of Minnesota that have a population of less than 10,000 people. We have 39 counties that have a population of less than 20,000 people, 52 counties with a population of less than 30,000 people. Now, I don't know what to do with that, other than I think the point that the way we've done things in the past isn't handed down from God is a good point. I mean, it's not true across the board, but painting with a broad brush, that means there's a county administrator and a human services director and a traffic engineer, a public works director and a county engineer and a county buildings and a county jail and a county assessor and a county recorder in each of those counties, regardless of how big or small they are. And I think as we think about how we redesign or reform government and the services that we're delivering with the tax dollars that we take from Minnesotans and then send, you know, utilize to do government services, you know, what's the best way, what's the most effective, efficient way to do that? I think we need to be willing to accept the premise that the way we've done things in the past isn't how we have to do it in the future. And there may be good reasons to continue to do things the way we've done them in the past, but maybe there is something around you know, trying to find efficiencies in terms of, you know, how we deliver counties programs or human services programs. Or so I just wanted to point that out, because I had actually, in all the time I had been here, I knew we had a bunch of small counties, but I didn't know we had 52 counties in the state of Minnesota that have a population of less than 30,000 people. I found that very interesting, and I think as we go forward, we should be willing to challenge some of those existing geographical boundaries and population boundaries as we think about how to do this best. Representative Reinert, I hope I didn't open a can of worms. I told you I wasn't trying to. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you, Representative Reinert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, Representative Coles, I'm not at all convinced that we need 87 counties in Minnesota anymore. And just on a small tangent, we've got four counties in the southern part of the state where the county seats are all within 30 miles of each other. Worked really well when your county seat was supposed to be one day's horse ride away from where you lived, but I don't ride horses. Most of us probably don't. To come back actually to the report, Mr. Ramajani, I think, you know, you're hearing that there's a bigger conversation to be had, and I'm not sure that we don't need to back up and talk more about income tax and sales tax, which are two big revenue sources for the state of Minnesota, because you hear some underlying convictions around those things. But we're here today to talk about the report that you did, and those pieces are in place. And I think Chair Lucheski makes a really good point that with expenditures, we do give some people a pass. And we give those passes sometimes based on values and sometimes based on priorities, and yet we don't really know whether those values are being reflected and those priorities are being measured. So with the fact that those passes are in place, I want to bring you back to you said not to use the word recommendation, so I'm not sure what word you would prefer, but item number 4 on page 3 of chapter 8, I think I got that right, says each tax expenditure could sunset with the biennial budget and be reauthorized, and in the very next point you use the word should, and I don't want to get into semantics, but I'm curious as to why you use the word could, because it strikes me that when we are doing passes that total almost $12 billion a year, I think we should look at those with every new budget and make value and priority choices based on current context. We often say things are on autopilot here, and I feel like our expenditures are on autopilot. And earlier, Representative Broad made a really good point about a tax system in the 21st century. And often we're trying to work around the edges of a 19th or 20th century system. So I am really curious about why you chose the word could instead of should, and if there's some reflection behind that, I'd be interested in hearing that this morning. And I would amend the chair's proposal to strike green eyes and insert blue eyes.
Mr. Ramajani or Ms. Vargas?
Madam Chair, Representative Reinert, I'll just make a short comment, and Sandy may want to add the perspective of the foundations on that. We actually had, inside the Public Strategies Group, we had a big debate about this, like we do about everything. And it's certainly, you're the ones that get to decide whether it's could or should, because you're elected by the people. But I think what we're trying to communicate there is even more imperative than sunsetting, we thought was measuring, knowing the results. And we chose to express that through those two words. But some of my partners would agree with you that should have said should.
Mm.
Madam Chair, thank you. I would choose the word should, but I appreciate knowing that there was that delineation made and what your thought behind it was.
Ms. Vargas?
I would just say that's the way that I remember the conversation at the foundation level. And again, we're careful. I mean, this was done so quickly that we wanted to get the ideas out there, but we didn't want to be we wanted to be emphatic, but we didn't want to be prescriptive.
And honestly, I wish there were more minority members here today, because sometimes these things feel partisan, but I want to tell members, Mr. Ramajani and Mr. Representative Reinert were just having this conversation about, you know, sunsets, and Mr. Ramajani was throwing in, you know, more important to actually, you know, look and measure and whatever. And I'm a co-author on two Republican bills. That one is Representative Pepin's bill that has sunsets.
And I think we should sunset everything. And that's what Representative Pep and I listened to her press conference, was very persuaded, watched it on my computer, and got on the bill. And Representative Loon just introduced, and many folks bipartisanly have tried to do this last session, and a lot of the chairs did it. Representative Loon, who's on this committee but isn't here at the moment, is the chief author of a zero-based budgeting bill, and I'm co-author on that as well. So really trying to get people to see this is not partisan. There are a lot of people with good ideas, and those are two minority members who are introducing bills on the various subjects that were just raised, and it takes courage on both sides of the aisle, like you've expressed in Vermont, to work together to solve these problems, and we're going to have to do it one way or another. So appreciate that. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to our guests. I think this is really thoughtful work, and I wanted to give you some hope that some things are moving forward on the structure on focus on results and performance in counties. We actually last year passed establishing performance standards for human services, so that we hopefully will get away from the hundreds of instructional bulletins and rules. And I mean, last year I carried a bill for the Department of Human Services that actually took out of statute a sentence that said, when you leave one appointment, you will have the appointment for the next appointment, the time and date of the next appointment. And I don't think our statute book should get to that level of how do you deliver services, and that we have good people throughout the state who will do what they need to do. But one of the issues that I and other members of this committee have been wrestling with is the maintenance of effort requirements, which we tend to think of as fiscal mandates and lead to unfair property tax burdens. But I thought I'd highlight for the members the statement that you have, and if it was on the right, the page numbering was easier, I'd point it to it, but otherwise I'll just quit reading it. It says, currently maintenance of effort requirements and mandates limit how counties can operate. Innovation is limited as MOE ties counties into old ways of doing things by restricting new thinking and designs. Old patterns of spending are not only encouraged but mandated, and I think that's a good incentive for us as we move forward. But my bigger question is, you know, we have stepped up to the results and performance of the past. I think the Minnesota milestones were passed in, I don't know, the 80s or something, and we updated them a couple of years ago. We even had people at the state fair vote on them and confirm whether they thought they were the right goals. We're not very good about keeping those in front of us. And actually, you know, every group wants to reinvent the wheel and come up with their own set of measurements, whether it's Twin City Compass or, you know, some other group. And have you given some thought to how do you build a system that actually people will honor and stay true to? It seems like we kind of do it once and we have a lot of fanfare and press conferences and pat ourselves on the back, and then we forget it for a couple of years and we lift it up again. And have you got any models in other states of how they do that?
Madam Chair, Representative,
please.
Absolutely, and I think this is a really fundamental, if we want to move to this kind of modality, it's very fundamental to have credible measures and so we know where we stand. Compass, they're making that into Minnesota Compass now, and that's one opportunity. But I want to tell you what Virginia, as the Council on Virginia Futures, which is made up of, I think it's 11-person council, made up of representatives of the governor, the legislature, there's some business, labor, people on the council. They have a small staff. It's independent of the executive branch and of the legislative branch, actually. It's a kind of a strange entity. And it its job is to track progress on mutually agreed on goals and report those transparently to Virginians, and so you can go on their website and you could see where things stand. Maryland's building a very robust system like that driven inside the executive branch. Oregon Benchmarks is another example of it's not the executive branch measuring itself. It's an independent organization largely driven by the business community. But it's been around through five governors in Oregon, and it's well respected as a credible source of information about the measures that Oregonians have agreed to are the bottom line for their state government. So I think there's some models out there, and we would do well, whatever, however you decide to do it, to have some sort of credible institution that we can all trust that measures and reports to Minnesotans on how we're doing.
Just one other comment, please. Madam Chair, Representative Loeffler. I think it's also important to capture the voice of the consumer. I don't know that the consumers, the citizens of this state, would design services exactly the way that they have been designed and delivered. I would just really raise that question and really try and capture the consumer. When I was at Hennepin, I know that we had, and now things have changed tremendously, so I'll give a lot of credit for that, and I think in other counties too. But it's once you have silos where you've got families kind of traversing from one silo to the next, it's very, very difficult. It's huge time consumption. And so how would we design services that would be consumer-focused towards outcomes that we really need, that in fact, if we're after self-sufficiency, if we're after wellness, that those things are very clearly defined and that we get the consumer voice in the conversation.
Thank you. Before we go back to Representative Loeffler, to that point, Representative Rukavina.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's to that point. Let's just take a look at, a little, just one thing here on page three. First of all, I am a consumer. I'm a consumer of, I've been there as a consumer of the healthcare industry. As I just said, watching, caring for my aunt for like 6 or 7 years with my one cousin from Wiper Lake, and for my mother for 3. I saw what those people in a nursing home do for those people. And I don't know if anybody, involved in this report from the five foundations has been to a nursing home recently and seen, someone feed your ma or dad and clean your mother and potty your mother. It's not an easy job. I'm sure there's nobody that did this report that's probably done that for a living. So as a consumer, I'm very, very satisfied with the services my mother and father got, and I don't know how to change that. That's just one little issue. You know, the problem with Representative Broad, you talked about there's a barrier of political will around here. I don't think I have a barrier, any barriers at all. I've told you what I want to do. It's ironic, if you look on page three, the first bullet there, number one is improve the health of citizens while spending $3.7 billion less, but nobody wants to talk about the fact that United Health Group, one insurance company, made $3.8 billion in profit last year. Who pays for that? The consumer? Do you address it in this report? Is that addressed in there? Maybe how we should get a little more money from them? One insurance company made as much money last year, increase, than what you're proposing on the first bullet to cut from our healthcare system to save money.
Go ahead. One insurance company isn't allowed to do business in Minnesota, right? Because they're a for-profit organization. So all those, it's...
The point being, Madam Chair, is this. Everybody's being asked to give up and do more with less, but the people who are making a lot more and doing way more with way more and wanting my mother to have one person helping give her a bath and a shower and have to go down that hallway and give 5-6 other people instead of 2 people that used to do it. That's reform. I'm the consumer. I saw it. I watched it for years. That's just one little part of my life. When's the last time anybody that did this report's been in a Lutheran Social Services building where there's, 4 people that are seriously medically handicapped, and we don't even know if they're mentally, what their mental capacity is. They can communicate. I've been in several of them this last few months before we came here, watching the cuts they're taking. They're in my office the other day, last week, a number of them coming down from the range, where they're all being asked to do more with less, and there isn't a person on this committee or a person that was involved in this study that would take a job at those homes. And that's who's going to be cut and who are going to do more with less, and you can't do it. But meanwhile, yeah, capitalism and one insurance company makes $3.8 billion more in profit. Where are they being asked to cut?
Madam Chair, just a quick response. You know, I think Representative Rukavina, we agree in some sense in that the folks that you're talking about,
no,
I mean, I've been...
Mind me, we'll talk.
No, no, I mean, in terms of the nursing home dollars, well, we've got to make sure that we can get more people taking and planning for their own care. And this is a bill that Paul Thiessen has with me, a bipartisan bill, encouraging people to plan and take care of their own needs so that we have less people on the public assistance realm so that those dollars can go farther. That's one of the reforms that we have to do that can get us in that direction. The other thing is related to housing. I think you make a great point. We shouldn't just spend dollars to spend dollars on housing. That's why I actually think that the supportive housing approach is a better approach because it's more of a comprehensive approach dealing with the issues, all of the issues related to why somebody might be homeless. So I think that that actually, what we're talking about comes back to the report and ideas for how we do things differently so that we can spend the dollars better, so that we can actually target the dollars to the people that you're talking about, which are the people who are most in need. On that, we agree. And the supportive housing example is one of those that Republicans and Democrats both want to do for maybe different reasons, but in the end, it serves people better and has dollars the dollars actually go farther because they leverage better. And so on those things, I think we agree. We just disagree on the bigger fundamental philosophical viewpoints. But I mean, that I think that's the point of this report, is that there's lots of places where there's common ground on finding ways to work better. Whether it's supportive housing or long-term care, we want to get the people who need help the help that they need to get back on their feet if possible, and we want to help those who most need that assistance, but we can do that best if we reform how government operates, and I think we actually agree on more than you think.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Broaden, you're never going to get away from having nursing homes. I don't care what you say, and nobody at this table can argue that we haven't really hurt nursing home funding the last several years, and that we're even going to hurt them more in the future. And because of modern medical technology, a lot of people who didn't end up being alive years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, or our veterans that are being saved because of modern technology, now are alive and living in, whether it's that Lutheran Social Service home or another one, and being taken care of. They're not going to go away. There's going to be more of them, not less. Their parents can't, when they're the day they're born and something happened to them in the birth canal or whatever, they're not going to say, geez, I should have bought long-term health insurance. You know, but nobody's addressing the health insurance. The $3.8 billion a year profit in an economy like this. How do you make that kind of profit? I don't understand it. But again, I'll say it the second time this week. I'm not the world's best capitalist. Maybe Representative Downey or somebody.
Representative
Or Bill. Bill's a very good capitalist.
Representative Loeffler actually had the floor. And I don't know if Representative Loeffler had anything left, but we're going to go back to her. And then we want to have you sum up for us, because this really, we're getting kind of off, but
yeah, we
really members should read this report. It's just so excellent and easy to consume and short, which is key for legislators, how you've broken it down and the chunks you want people to look at, and you posit questions for discussion and others. So I really think it's been great. Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. The last comment I just want to make is that I wish Representative Coles was here, because I learned long ago that we had counties as small as 6,000 people. And, you know, I had actually thought we needed to do something about that. And then I started really looking into it, and almost all of them are doing multi-county service provision. That doesn't forgive us the need to look at what's an efficient level of service delivery. When we created the community health agencies way back when, we said this number of population is what's going to really support the kind of services that communities deserve and need, and let counties organize themselves into those kind of groupings. And so we have 47 CHS agencies that range from large to, you know, I think the biggest one has, I don't remember how many counties combined together. I think at the same time, we're going to have to look, if we're going to go down that route, we have to look at all of them. I think there's urban townships that are, I can't understand why they're not a city, and there's cities that I can't understand why they're not a township. And I mean, I think all of our levels of government have kind of evolved without thinking about efficiency as the major goal. It's about history and community pride and other things that we're going to have to weigh, too.
Thank you. Ms. Vargas and Mr. Armajani, closing comments. Are you feeling sort of like depressed now, like how hard it is politically kind of watching us? and if you are, I'll just tell you this. You know what? We actually repealed a whole bunch of tax expenditures and got it through this committee and off the House floor into conference last year, which a lot of people thought couldn't be done. Didn't become law, but it's a you know, I've been around to know that it takes 2, 3, 4, 5 years for legislators to get it. So that was a huge success there in just getting people to get their heads around tax expenditures, and it's a long-term issue. But please, if you could give us your closing thoughts and comments.
Madam Chair and representatives, I just want to say that I am actually uplifted by this conversation, mainly because you've put some things on the table that we haven't heard before out in the public. And so I want to really say congratulations on your courage to raise these issues. And I'm hoping that it does take a long time. I mean, look how long LRT took. Look how long whatever else took. We know we're just so thrilled that you're taking this report and any other kinds of activity that's going on redesign, Representative Marquardt, very, very seriously. I hear that, and so I just want to say thank you and congratulations. And if we can be helpful, and obviously all of our assets are down too, but if we can be helpful in other ways, we're certainly willing to do that. There's still a lot of interest from the foundation community, or at least the foundations that have been involved in this. And so I'd like to say that we'd love to stay in touch and be helpful the way that we can. Thank you very much.
And sorry to interrupt, but it's just important for members to hear what you just said. You know, members need to realize this is private money that funded this thing. This is folks so frustrated out there, nonpartisanly, that their foundations are coming together using their own money to start telling government, look at this, look at this, look at this, look at this. And you know, that really says something right there. So tell the foundations, we appreciate that their boards of directors have decided that this was a worthy pursuit to try to help, you know, decision makers make decisions. Mr. Armajani?
Madam Chair, I don't have anything to add to what Sandy said. Thank you for inviting us, and I've loved hearing thoughts and ideas from both sides, and press forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being with us. We are adjourned.